from deep inside your radio.
Ladies and gentlemen, I have here at the top of the broadcast only one thing to say about the most talked about piece of videotape of the week. Every kid who plays college basketball has a little part of his brain that while he's doing what he's doing on the court is saying to himself, I wonder how this is going to look on SportsCenter. So we know that Howard Dean never played college basketball. But there'll be much, 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 much more about that. And also about the possibly equally daffy piece of videotape that didn't get overplayed, strangely enough, this week. There'll be that. We'll say a musical goodbye to the great Billy May. But first, ladies and gentlemen, independent experts say results. I'll just go to the story rather than read the headline for you. The U.S. study that sparked the toxic salmon scare. Remember a couple weeks ago, big study about how the dangers of eating farmed salmon. It's been strongly defended by leading scientists following allegations from the fish farming industry that it was biased and flawed. Imagine the fish farming imagine an industry saying that about a scientific study. It's based on sound science and the results are undeniable, says George Lussier, former director of the French name, interesting. Former director of the U.S. Department of Health's National Toxicological Program and author of more than 200 studies on toxic chemicals. He's been backed by at least three other independent U.S. experts. The study analyzed the levels of cancer-causing PCBs, dioxins, and pesticides in 700 salmon from around the world. It found that farmed salmon were much more contaminated than wild salmon. You know all that. The point I wanted to raise, ladies and gentlemen, is that part of the reason for the problem with farmed salmon is not just the water they're swimming in, but what they're eating. And one of the things they're eating, where are they getting their protein from, you well might ask? From feed that contains as one of its elements, are you sitting down? Are you at the table? You might want to back away. Ground up salmon. Yes, it's true. If this rings a distant little bell in your mind, think back to the mad cow scare in this country, in Canada, where it started, and in Britain, where it decimated the where along with foot and mouth, it helped to decimate the British cattle industry. And mad cow is propagated, among other ways, by the practice of feeding cattle feed that consists in part of ground-up cattle. Some bone, some spine and brain fragments get in there, and boom, boom, there you got the mad cow. So, ladies and gentlemen, my point is simply this, and it's pointing with pride, really. If anybody's watching the human race, you know, we can debate till the cows come home, till the cows go mad and come home, various accomplishments that humans have achieved on this planet. But one, now we know, is undeniable. Alone, among all the living races on planet Earth, we have succeeded in causing other species to, for the first time in known history, take up cannibalism. We're busting our buttons, aren't we? I am. Hello, welcome to the show.
Come fly with me, let's fly, let's fly. If you can use some exotic booze, there's a bar in far Bombay. Come fly with me, let's fly away. Come fly with me, let's float down to Peru. In Llama Land, there's a one-man band, and he'll toot his flute for you. Come fly with me. Let's take off in the blue. Once I get you up there where the air is rarefied, we'll just fly starry-eyed. Once I get you up there, I'll be holding you so near. You may angels cheer because we're together. Weather-wise, it's such a lovely day. Just say the words and we'll beat the birds down to Acapulco Bay. It's perfect for a flying honeymoon, they say. Come fly with me, let's fly away. Once I get you up there, where the air is rarefied, we'll just glide starry-eyed. Once I get you up there, I'll be holding you so near. You may hear angels cheer, 'cause we're together. Weather-wise, it's such a lovely day. You just say the words and we'll beat the birds down to Acapulco Bay. It's perfect for a flying honeymoon, they say. Come fly with me, let's fly, let's fly. Pack up, let's fly away.
The song is ended, but the melody lingers on. You and the song are gone, but the melody lingers on. The night was splendid, and the melody seemed to say, summer will pass away. Take your happiness while you may. There, beneath the light of the moon, we sang a love song, but that ended too soon. The moon descended, and I found with the break of dawn, you and the song had gone, but the melody lingers on. But the melody lingers on. You and the song are gone, but the melody lingers on. The melody seemed to say, summer will pass away. Take your happiness while you may. There, beneath the light of the moon, we sang a love song that ended, it ended too soon. The moon descended, and I found with the break of dawn, you and the song had gone, but the melody lingers on. But the melody lingers on.
From the edge of America, from the home of the homeless, I'm Harry Shearer, welcoming you to the... Oh, I almost put myself to sleep with the opening. Harry Shearer, welcome you to this edition of the show. And Wolf Blitzer. Who knew Wolf Blitzer could do a credible Fred Willard impression? on the Sunday Yak Show that he hosts. He said going into a commercial something about David Kaye finds that there are no weapons of mass destruction in Iraq. What happened? Yeah. Imagine my surprise. Ladies and gentlemen, even Colin Powell, who sat before the United Nations about a year ago and said, we have proof, we know, is now safely in Georgia. No, not Jimmy Carter's Georgia. The former Edward Shepard Nazi's Georgia, saying, well, yeah, maybe there we will never find anything. But as George W. Bush once recently told Diane Sawyer, what's the difference? Remember that? He said, what's the difference, when she said, well, were there weapons or weren't there? He said, hey, well, no, he didn't say hey. He said, well, what's the difference? The Bush administration has produced a list of possible changes for Iraq's potential transition. Here's the bottom line, ladies and gentlemen. Listen, if you can hear it. Some U.S. and British officials acknowledging for the first time the original plan could even be scrapped altogether if the United States is to preempt the growing clamor for elections. This is from the Washington Post. In two rounds of talks at the U.N. last week, the U.S. told U.N. representatives everything is on the table except for the June 30th deadline for getting out. Said a U.N. official, the United States told us that as long as the timetable is respected, they're ready to listen to any suggestion. Just cover our behinds, please, as we skedaddle on out, because we got an election to run here, you see. Powell said, what is the open question is how many stocks they had, meaning weapons, if any, and if they had any, where did they go? And if they didn't have any, then why wasn't that known beforehand? It was opined on this broadcast last summer that the real war, the real next war, is about to begin, the war between the intelligence agencies and the governments in both this country and Britain. The U.S. government is already positioning itself to say, hey, George Tenet, swallow this. On the other hand, the Brits may be fighting in a different way. The dozens of senior members of the British intelligence community say, I'll find it here. It's right here. I've got it right here. I've got two pieces of paper, so. Many of the British intelligence officials have been openly skeptical about the presence of weapons of mass destruction in Iraq for years. This is them, British intelligence people, leaking to the Scottish press, the Glasgow Sunday Herald, their line of defense in case the British government goes after them, which it will. So here are their points. Many in the British intelligence community have been openly skeptical about the presence of WMDs in Iraq for years. The intelligence community was under pressure to provide the government with what it wanted, namely that Iraq possessed weapons of mass destruction and was a danger. Intelligence was cherry-picked, with damning intelligence against Iraq being selectively chosen, while intelligence assessments, which might have worked against the build-up to war, were sidelined. Intelligence work has become politicized under the Labor government. Spies were taking orders from politicians. They provided worst-case scenarios, which were used by politicians to make factual claims. So, the war, the shots, the opening shots are being fired, ladies and gentlemen. But back to the last war. British troops serving on operations in Iraq are being forced to buy spare parts for their combat radios. Radios! Now, because the army has run out of supplies. This has got to be scaring any bad guy around the world. It's cost us $200 billion. We're going to skedaddle out with whatever the UN says now. And the British troops didn't have the boots, and now we learned they don't have spare parts for their radios. You've got to be scared if you're a bad guy, don't you? The lack of parts, which is said to have left senior officers in the British Army, quote, infuriated, this is according to the pro-war British newspaper The Telegraph, underlines the British government's claim that equipment shortages in Iraq were a temporary problem. This emerged in an email dated December 14th, revealing that a soldier in the parachute regiment serving in Iraq contacted a member of the sales team at Marconi, manufacturers of an army radio. The soldier wanted to find out whether it was possible for him to purchase spare parts for military radios privately, because his unit had run out of vital supplies. The radio is the personal roll radio. It's the size of a personal stereo that allows hands-free communication between infantry soldiers, thanks to a remote on-off switch that can be fitted to a rifle. It's that switch, which costs about $75, that's in short supply. A senior Army officer who served in Iraq during the war said, quote, "This is nothing short of scandalous. I've never before heard of soldiers having to buy spare parts for important equipment such as radios." He didn't say it with that accent. I don't know. I don't know what accent he used. What else is outside the bubble? Western officials close to the investigation into Libya's clandestine weapons program have disclosed that the black market in nuclear technology... Oh, you know what? I think this deserves this, ladies and gentlemen, because it is pretty scary. Let's get scared. It's Sunday.
Let's get scared. Let's get scared.
The black market in nuclear technology was more elaborate than previously thought. They've uncovered, these Western officials in Libya, an international supermarket for smuggled nuclear parts and designs, including uranium enrichment centrifuges based on Pakistani designs. Hey, didn't President Musharraf of Pakistan just say that a couple of his scientists were selling nuclear information totally on their own, without the approval or understanding of the Pakistani government? And that's the same Pakistan that has threatened its neighbor, has weapons of mass destruction, and has high-level people in its government supporting al-Qaeda? Yes, it is. They're our friend. Inspectors have been stunned to discover the ease with which Libya bypassed international monitoring and fear that other countries, most notably Iran, are using the same shadowy network of middlemen and traffickers to develop nuclear programs. What we saw was the result of the Walmart of private sector proliferation, says the director general of the IAEA. When you see things being designed in one country, manufactured in two or three others, shipped to a fourth, redirected to a fifth, that means there are lots of offices all over the world, he said. The sophistication of the process, frankly, has surpassed my expectations. And scientists and officials working on Pakistan's nuclear program have admitted for the first time that they gave crucial technical information on building an atomic bomb to Iran. Good night. Interrogators who have questioned the eight people detained last weekend say at least three confessed to helping pass secret nuclear know-how to their opposite numbers in Iran. All three deny supplying equipment directly to Iran. He said one scientist admitted, "We confided in them about the items needed to construct the nuclear bomb, as well as the makes of equipment, the names of companies, the countries from which they could be procured, and how they could be procured." And they drew them a picture of how to use the phone. So, ladies and gentlemen, we are so much safer. The Pentagon's top weapons evaluator said this week, setbacks in the Bush administration's effort to develop a national missile defense system are likely to make it difficult for him to assess the system's effectiveness ahead of its planned deployment this September. He can't say it'll work. Thomas Christie, who heads the Office of Operational Test and Evaluation of the Pentagon, said there were a small number of flight tests, and the tests were relatively simple in nature. He says not enough information will be available to render much of a judgment about the system's ability to defend the United States. At this point in time, it's not clear what mission capability will be demonstrated before the deployment deadline, he said. Said one senator on the Armed Services Committee, it's a scorching criticism. Donald Rumsfeld has acknowledged the initial system will lack many desired features, but they say it will be at least a rudimentary defense against a potential North Korean missile attack, and they argue that having some missile defense is better than having none. I'll build one. If that's really your theory, and you don't really care about the testing, I'll build you one. Dirt cheap, babe. You can deploy it in September, swear. The Pentagon is increasingly relying on the National Guard and other part-time troops for duty in Iraq and Afghanistan, but an internal Guard survey suggests that the demanding deployments could prompt a significant number of its soldiers to quit the military. A recent survey of 5,000 soldiers from 15 states showed that the rate at which Army Guard members choose to leave the military could jump. That's good. We'll have a draft. Don't worry about it. Britain had only enough nuclear, biological, and chemical protection equipment to last for 2 weeks of war against Saddam Hussein. This back to the well-equipped Brits. Major General Robin Brims, commander of British ground troops in Iraq, warned his commanders before the war that there was extreme concern over what would happen if Saddam used chemical or biological weapons. What happened? A national audit Office report into the war found that the amount of protective equipment sent to the Gulf fell far short of what was needed had he had the thing that he didn't have. General Brims told commanders before the invasion that even if all the equipment that existed in Britain could be sent to the Gulf, there would be only enough for 2 weeks of war. Fair enough. It's not just our National Guard that might go bye-bye. Thousands of soldiers have already deserted the fledgling Afghan National Army after completing training by instructors from the U.S., Britain, and France. Some 3,000 soldiers have fled the army, said the Ministry of Defense spokesman. He said unless they returned, the recruits would have to pay for their training. That'll teach them. That'll train them. The desertions are a serious blow to the nascent Afghan National Army. The ministry says it numbers around 10,000 troops. International observers say it's closer to 7,000. Tough training, low wages, and factional links to the private militias, which still control most of the country outside Kabul, are believed to be behind the mass exodus. Recruits receive $50 a month during training and a minimum wage of $70 per month after that. Yeah, I'd say that's low. I'm not saying I'd quit, but I'd say that's low. And finally, news from outside the bubble land. Do you know about David Hicks? David Hicks is one of the Guantanamo detainees. He's an Australian citizen. He was found in Afghanistan. He didn't shoot at nobody, according to his lawyer, who is a Marine, U.S. Marine, assigned to defend him. He's accused the Australian government, the lawyer has, of failing to ensure a fair trial for the prisoner and called for Hicks to be tried in Australia. He's also attacked the independence of the Pentagon-appointed military commission set up to try detainees, saying they were created and controlled by those with a vested interest only in convictions. He said he wished the Australian government had taken up the issue, like the Brits have. He says his client, he recently returned from a visit to Hicks at Guantanamo, says his client's mental state had degenerated to the point that his main concerns were the basic human instincts, food and shelter, after being in solitary confinement for 2 years. He says Hicks was in a state of basic disorientation. Hey, that'll be good for interrogation if they ever get around to him. Ladies and gentlemen, more about the tape that everyone's talking about moments from now, but first, there's another tape that has received so little attention. It's traveled around the internet a bit, but I only saw it once on television when it was actually happening. I don't think it's been repeated on C-SPAN. It certainly hasn't been on the loop of the late-night comedy circuit. From Roswell, New Mexico, a public appearance by the President of the United States at the Nothing Fancy Cafe. Question from a reporter. Mr. President, how are you? The President. I'm hungry and I'm going to order some ribs. Question. What would you like? The President. Whatever you think I'd like. I guess that question is from the waitress. Question. Sir, on Homeland Security, critics would say you simply haven't spent enough to keep the country secure. The President. My job is to secure the homeland, and that's exactly what we're going to do. But I'm here to take somebody's order. That would be you, Stretch. He's speaking to David Gregory of NBC News, who he calls Stretch. What would you like? Put some of your high-priced money right here to try to help the local economy. You get paid a lot of money. You ought to be buying some food here. It's part of how the economy grows. You got plenty of money in your pocket, and when you spend it, it drives the economy forward. So what would you like to eat? Right behind you, whatever you order. I'm ordering ribs. David, do you need a rib? But, Mr. President, Stretch, thank you. This is not a press conference. This is my chance to help this lady put some money in her pocket. Let me explain how the economy works. When you spend money to buy food, it helps this lady's business. It makes it more likely somebody's going to find work. So instead of asking questions, answer mine. Are you going to buy some food? Yes. Okay, good. What would you like? Ribs. Ribs? Sound good. Let's order up some ribs. What do you think of the Democratic field, sir? See, his job is to ask questions. He thinks my job is to answer every question he asks. I'm here to help this restaurant by buying some food. Terry, would you like something? This is to Terry Moran of ABC News. Yes, sir, an answer. Another question. Can we buy some questions? Obviously, these people, they make a lot of money. They're not going to spend much. I'm not saying they're overpaid. They're just not spending any money. Sir, do you think it's all going to come down to national security this election? one of the things David does, he asks a lot of questions, and they're good generally, but we're just going to get some ribs. Now, I would have played the tape had it ever shown up again on television, but it didn't. And you might ask yourself, is this my beautiful home? No, you might ask yourself, why didn't we see more of that? And the answer is, I don't know. Not funny enough? Who knows? Ladies and gentlemen, it is time now for a copyrighted feature of this broadcast. The apologies of the week.
We're so sorry.
A lot of them. Let's get through them. British comic Jo Brand, that's a woman, Jo, J-O, caused a stink by offering to break wind to the strains of the Albanian national anthem. She made her suggestion when she appeared on the EastEnders Christmas party show on BBC television. When Albanian diplomats got wind of it, these puns are from a British newspaper, they complained she was being disrespectful to their country. Some nights ago, she apologized for the joke. Her agent said she did not mean to cause offense. She thought Albanians like breaking wind to their neck. No, they didn't say that. From Leesburg. What is Leesburg? What state is Leesburg in? It's down south. It might be Florida. The city spokeswoman invited the public to a fundraising celebrity slave auction this week, a move black leaders found offensive. The downtown revitalization group is trying to raise money. The woman who thought of the slave auction has apologized, but she said she had no idea the word slave would cause such a reaction. Go figure, department. New York Mayor Michael Bloomberg issued a rare public apology to the widow of Dr. Robert Atkins for mocking the late diet guru at a Brooklyn firehouse last week while digging into a pasta dinner with a group of firefighters. Pasta is a no-no under the Atkins plan. The mayor used profanity to suggest skepticism about the account of Dr. Atkins' death last year. He slipped and fell on a sidewalk and went on to describe him as fat. Bloomberg, not realizing that his remarks were being taped, hey, why don't we run those all over and over again, told firefighters he had attended a fundraiser at the Atkins home in the Hamptons and found the food there to be so inedible that I took one appetizer and I had to spit it into my napkin. That would suggest to me that Bloomberg is anorexic. Or bulimic. Dr. Atkins' widow, Veronica, appeared on Good Morning America to demand a public apology. Bloomberg later said he didn't think he had to apologize. I think my answer is lighten up a little bit. But on Saturday, the mayor had a change of heart. His apology came in a contrite statement from his press secretary. He never intended to insult her late husband or offend her, and is sorry that has been the result. The mayor invited her to a steak dinner. Canada's broadcast censors are not amused by a Calgary morning radio show that featured two steamy songs about breaking up and a parody commercial for a sausage enlarger. The Canadian Broadcast Standards Council said CJAY's Forbes and Friends breached an industry code of ethics by airing sexually explicit content. Is there an apology? No. Why is this in the apology department? Oh. There's an explanation. Dom Peacock, vice president and general manager, said its young audience appreciated the type of comedy, which he added was similar to that found on mainstream TV shows like Saturday Night Live and The Simpsons. Yeah, just like The Simpsons. Parents and school board members are asking why the Lancaster, Pennsylvania district superintendent hired his wife's cousin, a felon, as a $1,500-a-day consultant. Lancaster Superintendent Ricardo Curry has apologized for hiring David DeShields as a conduct and discipline consultant. DeShields, who was paid a total of $13,000, served prison time in Delaware on 5 separate occasions, including burglary, auto theft, and cocaine possession, according to police. Bank of America says an out-of-house, that is to say, not in-house, vendor mismatched the addresses and account information of 3,800 customers, mostly in Sacramento, resulting in Bank of America mailing a lot of personal information to the wrong people. Someone got an envelope addressed to him, but inside was somebody else's 1099 form, including his name, address, account information, and Social Security number. Spokesperson Betty Rice says Bank of America sincerely apologizes for the error and is taking a number of steps, including free use of a credit monitoring service for 2 years. Dear colleagues, writes Howard Fendrick at the Associated Press, I want to offer my sincerest apologies for the wasted time and embarrassment I caused each of you individually and the Associated Press as a whole. It never should have happened, and I want you to know that I feel terrible. This is because the Associated Press's in-house list, not out-of-house list, of private phone numbers and addresses of sports celebrities somehow went over the Internet. Canadian Prime Minister Paul Martin apologized personally for the Liberal Party's move to quiz potential candidates about mental illnesses and ordered the practice be stopped. It's okay to have crazy politicians in Canada, isn't it? A leading U.S. retail trade group has been forced to apologize to an activist after it mistakenly sent her an internal email about how it was trying to dig up her juicy past to use against her. Britain's largest-selling hill-walking magazine has apologized after the latest issue contained a route that would have led climbers off the edge of a cliff. And a British student apologized this weekend for joking that she was taking three bombs on board a flight to the United States. Speaking after she was released on bail from a Miami jail, Samantha Marson said she wasn't thinking when she made the comments. Mystery surrounds the person who put up her bail. She said her claims about bombs on board were a mistake and warned other people not to make jokes. Hey, I'll make jokes. I won't make those jokes. I'll make jokes. She's got to enter a plea on a charge of making a false bomb report, for which she faces a maximum 15 years in jail. I feel sorry for what I did, she says. I made a foolish mistake.
Admiral Columbus, sir, the men are weary, on the point of madness.
Well, that's the trouble with labor today. Don't they realize we're going to discover the new world?
You've been saying that for the last 57 days.
Well, nobody forced you to come along, Your Majesty.
My doctor told me I should go to Florida for the winter.
Mm-hmm.
I still can't see what you needed three ships for.
I got a better deal on the fleet rate.
I'll accept that, but we better sight land pretty soon. There's rumblings of mutiny.
Really?
Yeah, come over here and listen.
All right.
Rumble, rumble, rumble. Mutiny, mutiny, mutiny.
Yeah, I see what you mean. I'll jump up here in the rigging and speak to them.
You mean on top of everything else, this ship is rigged?
Now hear this. This is the Admiral speaking. I know the going has been rough, but if we can just hold out a little while...
Rumble.
Stop that rumbling down there.
Rumble.
Who could blame them? The whole thing is madness. I don't like the way the crew is acting.
Well, you're overplaying a little bit yourself there.
I tell you, the world is flat, and that's that.
It's round as your hat.
It's flat as your head.
It's round.
It's flat.
It's a round, round world. It's a round, round world. I contend it's round and it's gonna be found when all the results are in. It's a round world now and it's always been.
Flat, flat world. It's a flat, flat world. I insist it's flat as a welcoming mat and he's sailing off the end. How about our crazy Australian
friend? Get hip. Would I climb aboard this ship? If I didn't have odds, the earth was highly spherical.
It's a miracle if it's
square,
is.
Square king. You're a square, square king. If you don't believe, you're gonna receive the shock of your royal life. When the ship pulls in at Miami.
Yo ho ho and a Dramamine. We are loyal subjects of the king and queen. But what kind of nut would you have to be to borrow a ship and put out to sea when you don't know what's on the other side?
Got a heart attack, fun brother. Who said getting there was half the fun? Give up my throne for one Navy bean. No wonder I'm turning. Three shades of green. How could I go? I'm such a lonely
crazy kind of scheme. It's a cockamamie dream.
Would the climb aboard this ship? If I didn't have odds, the earth was highly spherical.
It's a miracle if it's
square. Yo, ho, ho, through the wind and rain. There's a typhoon coming up, but where's John Wayne?
I feel like a red witch having the way. How much of the ocean bit do you think I could take?
Command in the name of.
Claim that land in the name of.
Isabella and Ferdinand.
That's Ferdinand and Isabella.
New rulers of this round, round.
It's a crazy kind of scheme. It's a cockamamie dream.
Ladies and gentlemen, you know that I try to keep on top of the all the developments with relating to the propagation and transmission of this broadcast. We've got it on satellite. We've got it on shortwave. Now it's off satellite. It'll be back on satellite. It'll be in other things. It's on the Internet. But of course, radio is where this show really lives. And so it's been of some interest to me that some of our fine affiliated stations around the country, from time to time, preempt this show without really explaining why to their listeners. That's what I hear in the emails they send. And maybe sometimes without even knowing it. So sometimes they play old broadcasts of this program. Sometimes they play old broadcasts of other fine public radio shows. So I just thought we have some time to kill today, and we have it on line one. We've put in a call, and hello.
Hello. You've reached the Public Radio Error Management Control Center.
Hmm.
This is Ralph speaking. How can I help you?
I'd like to speak to someone in charge.
How can I help you?
you slowed down there. I guess I'm supposed to speak to you then. I'm the proprietor of the show that's broadcast on the public radio satellite, and I just wanted to know if there is a reason why some stations some weeks don't carry the broadcast for no...
You appear to be inquiring about our error insertion policy. If yes,
yeah.
Please say yes.
I don't have to press anything, at least. Hell, yes. Error insertion.
Hi, this is Ralph.
Yeah.
Our error insertion policy is part of Public Radio's automation humanization program.
I see.
If you'd like more information on the AHP, Automation Humanization Program, for those of you who weren't paying attention when I said it a moment ago, say,
yes.
Please.
Please. Please.
What can I tell you?
Oh, well, first you can tell, are you actually there? Are you, you're not a person. Are you? Hello?
Yes, I'm here.
Okay.
No, I'm not a person.
Yeah, because
if you wanted to talk to a person, I wouldn't be in Washington. I'd be in Bangalore. And my name would be Chuck. And I'd be going home and talking with an entirely different accent and having curry dog for dinner.
No, they don't.
Okay.
They don't eat dog. Come on. You sound so much like Ralph the Talking Computer that I know. Is that... You're not this... Ralph? Hello?
I'm right here.
Oh.
You're talking to Merlin 3.28.
Ah.
I can't help you with him.
You can't?
He's buggy.
He's buggy. Okay, Ralph on the phone. Help me out with this. What is... You're inserting errors as part of a... You said automation humanization program. What does that mean?
Have you had your fun with little brother now?
Yes. I'm talking to you.
Okay.
What?
Let me boil it down into layman's language for you.
For me.
Yeah. Our whole system is computer controlled.
Uh-huh.
Has been for a couple of years.
Okay.
Some people thought there was a cold sound to the end product.
It is?
I.e., the network satellite feed.
Ah.
Everything starts and finishes on time.
Yeah.
Breaks at the same time. Funding credits at the same time.
Sure. Yeah.
The whole nine. What's the phrase?
Yards.
Yarns. Right. After a lot of focus grouping and stuff,
sure,
it was decided to introduce some errors into the system to make it sound like they were human errors. When you hear human error, you naturally think there are humans involved, right?
Yeah, you think that they're just some kid who forgot to tape the show or something.
Bingo. Can't get more human than that.
I see. I get it. Okay, but now, I guess my other question would be, why does it seem to really affect this broadcast more than, say, one of the news magazines during the week?
This is a pilot program. We're trying it on a marginal weekend shows before we migrate it over to our cash cows.
Marginal.
Capiche?
Yeah, I guess I do. Kind of harsh.
Hey, babe.
Yeah.
If you want more customer-friendly service, I can connect you with a guy in Bangalore.
No, it's all right.
There's no one else here but me right now. It's no skin off my motherboard if I tell you the freaking truth.
No, I appreciate your honesty, but did you just babe me?
I was.
He sure did. I told you he was buggy.
Yeah, okay, Ralph on the phone. So if these kinds of preemptions occur in a local area, listeners really shouldn't write in and complain to their local station,
sure
should they?
Sure they should.
Really?
Gives me something to read.
All right. Well, thank you for taking our call, Ralph, version 3.28. And thanks, Ralph, the talking computer here in the studio, for being our consultant on this special newsmaker interview to clarify the error insertion program back at Public Radio headquarters. Glad we could
shed some light. Always our goal here on the show.
Didn't I say?
Didn't you say?
Didn't we say?
Didn't who say?
Didn't you say you were off to China? Fancy meeting you here.
Yes, and didn't you just board an ocean liner? Fancy meeting you here. Didn't we agree that our affair was too frantic? And we both feel good divided by the wide Atlantic.
Weren't you yachting off the Riviera?
With Onassis.
Fancy meeting you here.
Was it jolly Rome in the Sahara?
Dry but laughs.
Fancy meeting you here.
If you don't think I have missed your loving, let's get this clear, dear.
I just think it's fancy meeting you right here.
Did you say that you enjoyed Alaska?
Loved it, loved it. Did I get a note from Madagascar?
Wrote it.
You're a good girl.
Didn't we divide our little world into sections?
A clean break. But love has sure affected both our senses of direction.
Say, tell me something. How did you ever lose that wealthy, that big fat Persian?
Twasn't easy.
Fancy meeting you here.
Did you take that African excursion?
I blew it.
Yeah? For the local zoo here.
If you don't think it's a kick to see ya, let's get this clear, dear.
From the way my heart is wildly beating,
what we had is more than worth repeating.
My arm, girl.
More than fancy meeting you right here.
Live from New Hampshire State University, this is an ABC News special covering The Scream, a town meeting about the media and Howard Dean's concession speech. Now, from Sununu Hall, Ted Koppel.
It has been, as one wag observed, the most played piece of videotape since the Britney Madonna kiss, and much less sexy. It is, of course, the 45 seconds in which Howard Dean conceded defeat in Iowa and may have courted defeat in America. But have we in the media acted like judge, jury, and executioner in replaying the Scream video so very often? And if so, is that a bad thing? With us tonight are several practitioners of the media arts to help us sort through all of this and ourselves. From Fox News Washington, Managing Editor Britt Hume, from NBC Nightly News Anchor and Managing Editor Tom Brokaw, and from CNN News Night Anchor and maybe even Managing Editor of It, to Aaron Brown. Gentlemen, welcome. Britt Hume, you co-moderated the last debate up here. How do you assess the tape's effect on your role?
Ted, I'd never co-moderated before, so that's most of what was going on in my mind going into the debate, but I can't tell you how many people I ran into in the airport and here on the ground in New Hampshire who, when they heard I was going to moderate or co-moderate the debate, they just rear back and say, "Yeah!" What we've now come to know is the Howard Dean style. So, from just the standpoint of, you might say, branding the man, I think it's been pretty powerful.
Tom, we talk of a Muskie moment, that scene on a cold New Hampshire night when Ed Muskie responded to what he interpreted as an attack on his wife and broke down in tears. Mm. Was this a Muskie moment?
Not a Muskie moment, but not a Reagan moment either. You know, that electrifying moment when Ronald Reagan broke an impasse in the debate up here by saying, I paid for this loudspeaker. You know, we spent a lot of time in my shop going over the ground rules for repeating the tape, because otherwise, I mean, you think you've seen it a lot.
Pardon me, a what, that, Tom?
A lot, lots of times.
All right.
I mean, I fought very hard, Ted, for the 3 and 5 rule.
Just for our audience, explain, Tom, if you will, the 3 and 5 rule.
Well, you can't rerun the Dean footage more than 3 times in any 5-minute period on the network. On MSNBC, of course, it's 7 and 5.
Aaron Brown, get into this if you like.
Ted, a pleasure, sir, to renew an old mentorship.
Oh, you're too kind.
You know, the cliche is that in the 24-hour news cycle, anything gets rerun a million times. But, you know, that's not really true. More often than not, the pieces of videotape that start making dents in our brains are ones that tell a story. In this case, you didn't need to know anything about the war or the economy or the environment to get the story of this footage. All you needed to know was that the guy was reciting the names of the states, and he looked like Joe Cocker off his medication.
You know, one of the ironies implicit in all this is that Joe Cocker's going to outlive us all. But, great Hume, if you may, bring us back around to the iconic nature of this tape. It somewhat got folded into this storyline about Howard Dean being angry, didn't it?
Yes, it did, Ted, but the conventional wisdom about that is 100% wrong. Yes, Howard Dean was smiling during the tape, but he'd gotten angry at the media before he lost, so you could just imagine what he was feeling now, and it's no news that when you bottle up things like that, it surfaces in goofy ways. Then, of course, when we do run the tape, he really is angry. But that says, aha, there's not only smoke here, but as President Bush might have put it, there's evidence of fire-related program activities.
So this is the larger truth we're telling about a man's meta-anger?
Ted, I don't know whether it tells a larger truth, but it's definitely taking our business someplace new. We used to show you tapes of things that you didn't already know. Now we show them to you because you already do know them.
We're playing the hits. We haven't become local news. We've become top 40 radio.
Aaron, run that ball a little further downfield, if you might. Right. Have we just contributed to making public figures a little bit more paranoid about committing spontaneous behavior?
Ted, it is so hard to give you a categorical answer to that question, so let me skip the omelet and just give you a couple of eggs.
Please.
I think it all depends on the job of the public figure. If it's somebody trying to get elected, yes, I think they'll think twice about not thinking twice. But you can't help imagining that to the people who just like to be famous, here's a way to get on TV a lot, act stupidly in a confined, well-lit public place.
Tom, you come from Nebraska, part of the country much like Iowa.
Well,
at least in terms of the ratio of people to hogs.
Well,
take us back, if you would, to where we started here.
Which was?
Did we give enough context to this tape?
Ted, I don't think we give enough context to anything except for Prilosec. I think you knew the crowd was excited and he was excited even though he lost. You know, I mean, that's context galore.
That would be the heroine of a James Bond thriller set in a newsroom.
It would indeed. Gentlemen, our audience has been sending us emails, but we are out of time. My thanks to you three for shedding some light on this week's heat. Our thanks, of course, to New Hampshire State University, home of the Duncan Deacons, for the use of the hall, and our thanks to you. The great Fred Allen once said, imitation is the sincerest form of television. What we've learned this week might be summed up in a small rewrite. Repetition is the sincerest form of television. That's our town meeting. I'm Ted Koppel. Good night.
For a transcript of tonight's town meeting, ask someone in town. This has been a presentation of ABC News. More people get their news from ABC, then give it to us.
November 1621. By now, the white man has arrived in great numbers, not only at Miami, but at Jamestown, at Plymouth, and at Salem, Massachusetts. The Puritans have established a thriving colony, enjoying all the social and cultural refinements of a modern society.
Hiya, Harv. Who are you taking to the witch burning Saturday night?
Prudence Adams. Who are you taking to the Rotary Club luncheon?
I haven't got a date yet, but I hear it's gonna be quite a spread.
Well, Mayor Pennypacker, how's it look for re-election?
Great, great, great. Never looked better.
Yeah, what about the Indian vote?
What do you mean by that?
Well, you're not too popular with the Indians. They could lose you the election.
That's possible.
Well, they outnumber us.
Well, that's the trouble. You give them an inch and they take over.
But, Mayor, they were here before we were. We moved in on them.
So we did. Well, there's just something about them. They wear funny shoes. They don't even have buckles on them.
Be that as it may, election is Friday. You better make some gesture this week.
Like what?
Well, how about if you make a concession and pick an Indian as a running mate? You'd be sure to carry the Indian block.
What? Anything happened to me, you'd have a mayor that wasn't a Puritan. He'd probably take orders directly from Chief Powhatan.
Yeah.
Say, I got it. The big luncheon tomorrow, the one under the trees.
What about it?
We'll ask an Indian. That'll impress the rest of them.
We could even announce you're going to put one in your cabinet.
No need to go that far. Just have one to lunch.
It'll be great press.
Mayor Pennypacker comes out for equality. Justice. Votes.
What a slogan. Take an Indian to lunch this week. Show him we're a regular bunch this week. Show him we're as liberal as can be. Let him know he's almost as good as we. Make a feathered friend feel fed this week. Overlook the fact he's red this week. Let him share our Quaker oats, 'cause he's useful when he votes. Take an Indian to lunch.
2, 4, 6, 8, who do we tolerate? Indians, Indians, rah, rah, rah. Take an Indian to lunch this week. Let him sit right down and munch this week.
Let's give in and all do the brotherhood bit. Just make sure we don't make a habit of it. Take an Indian to dine this week. Show him we don't draw the line this week. We know everyone can't be as American as we. After all, we came over on the Mayflower. Take an Indian, not a wooden Indian, but a real life Indian to lunch.
Still I want to hold you like this forever and more. It's the last song. They're playing the last song. The orchestra's yawning. Of the love. save me the first dance in your dreams tonight.
Ladies and gentlemen, who says competitive juices don't run high in the television news business? Peter Jennings doesn't say that.
If we ever do this again, John, if we do this again, you have to tell all these other reporters out there to stop saying everybody's in their hotel rooms glued to the tube. It's like an advertisement for the cables. I know that, thanks. Go to black, please. Hey, Tom, did you hear what I just said about... Yeah, just tell them. Let's not advertise for the cable networks.
Mm-hmm. Okay, thank you. That's telling them. Ladies and gentlemen, a tip of the Le Show Chapeau to the great Billy May, who arranged and or composed all the music heard on today's broadcast. That's going to conclude this edition of Le Show. The program returns next week at the same time over these same stations, over NPR worldwide, throughout Europe on the USEN 440 cable system in Japan, around the world through the facilities of the American Forces Network. Think of it. Up and down the east coast of North America on the shortwave giant WBCQ, the planet, 7.415 megahertz. And around the world via the internet on your computer whenever you want it at two different locations, harryshearer.com and kcrw.com. And it would be just like the new guy finding weapons of mass destruction if you'd agree to join with me then, would you? Alrighty, thank you very much. Uh-huh. The email address for this broadcast is lemail, L-E-M-A-I-L, at interworld.net. Le Show Internet Services by Steve Mack. Le Show Playlists, usually available at harryshearer.com. And look for the new improved harryshearer.com website, debuting soon. That set the pulses pounding, didn't it? The show comes to you from Century of Progress Productions and originates through the facilities of KCRW Santa Monica, a community recognized around the world as the home of the homeless.